Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy?
Real.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hours with doctor and author Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings here on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. Again, area code 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week. Those email addresses are attorney@vaccinerights.com, attorney@vaccinerights.com, and Dr. Tenpenny at gmail.com, though we have to caution you that due to the volume of emails, you may not get a personal response from Dr. Tenpenny, but please feel free to email her with your concerns in any event. This is January 12, 2015. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and with me this evening, my wonderful, wonderful new co-host for this show, the Know Your Rights Hour, these days, fallen angel in the land of Pharmastralia, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Sherry, how are you doing this evening?
Good evening,
Alan.
I
thought you'd like
that
one.
Great introduction. That was great.
I thought you might like
well,
that
it's
one.
Certainly been a, it's been a wild ride so far. We've got a ways to go. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out over the next 6 weeks.
Let's just in case there are listeners who are not already on board with what's going on, Sherry, could you give just a really brief description here so that I won't seem as horrible as I might have with that introduction?
Yeah, well, this started several months ago when, well, actually started last summer when the decision was made to go on a holiday to Australia, and then I connected with Stephanie Messenger, and she said, well, what if we set up a series of events for you to speak at so that you can talk to a bunch of people in Australia about vaccines and give them sort of the information that you give a lot of parents here in America? And I said, well, yeah, that sounds great. So she's been doing all the footwork. I have been accused of setting up a speaking tour in Australia when the truth is I've been a guest to speak in Australia. And so we got everything lined up, ready to go. And then a week ago, actually, it was on January the 4th, I take a class on Saturday morning. And when I came out and got in my car, my Twitter feeds were going crazy and my alerts were going crazy. And when I looked at the article, it was an article that had been published in, I believe it was the Daily Mail in Australia, saying that they Australians did not, the pro-vaccine people, the public health department, and those activists, the pro-vaccine activists, did not want me in their country, and they called me on the initial article a public health menace, an international public health menace, for letting people know that there was another side to the story that they should be familiar with. And from there, it's just been one crazy day after another between radio interviews and print interviews, and I was on the Australian version of the Today Show on Thursday, and then they posted it on the internet, and then ABC took it down, and we've had thousands and thousands of more people join our Facebook page. And earlier today, I was on Richie Allen's radio show, who's one of the largest internet radio shows in all of Europe. And while he was interviewing me, he said, I can't keep up with the amount of tweets and things that are coming in here from all over the world. And so at the very least, you know, there's an expression, Alan, where they say that even bad publicity is still publicity. Well,
yep.
I think that we've had an opportunity to possibly millions of people all around the world that didn't know who I was, didn't know who we are in America, speaking out for the rights of children and adults around the world, saying you should have a right to choose what's being injected into your body, and you should have some more familiarity with what that is, what it can possibly do to you, and what it really doesn't do to your health. And millions of people who never even thought to, like, raise up their head and question are now saying, you mean I should ask the doctor about that flu shot he's going to stick in my arm? So I think this is an amazing change of events.
And I think it was it really is amazing, Sherry. And you had mentioned to me previously, I think you were talking about one of the interviews you did with someone in Australia, how you were saying something to the effect of, you know, I could have just come in here for my holiday, talked to a few hundred people, been very calm and quiet about it and left, and no one would have known the difference. But somebody had to sort of blow this out of proportion. And Sherry, I think the net effect of this is going to be just the opposite of what they had hoped to get out of it. At least collectively and internationally. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I agree. And everything you said is really true, and I've said it multiple times. I mean, I could have gone in there, made some new friends, done my holidays, seen some of the countryside. We were going to be in Melbourne, Sydney, Gold Coast, Adelaide, and Brisbane. I've had the good fortune to have been in Australia before, in Melbourne and Sydney, but I've not seen those other cities. The speaking events were on the weekends, and so I was going to be able to enjoy my holiday during the week and meet some new friends and quietly leave. And now of those events, I believe that there were seven of them that were scheduled. Two are still on the books, as far as I know, today. 5 of them have canceled because of the pressure of the media. And the people at the hotel said that it was so controversial, they didn't want to be involved with it. I've heard rumor that they were absolutely pressured behind the scenes to cancel the events. That's just a rumor, unsubstantiated. I don't know that to be true. But it's been really interesting because they won't let it go. I mean, there was more news alerts in the newspaper yesterday. So, and this is a very long news cycle for anybody who's been involved in any kind of media. You know, media is, you know, they have such a short attention span. And so things to be in the news for a few days, particularly something like this that would normally not even get any press, for this to be
right.
in the news and continuing to be cycled for 9 days, that is a very long news cycle.
Well, it sounds to me like either they haven't figured out that they should cut their losses and be quiet, at least if any of this the perpetuation of this is due to people in the pro-vaccine community keeping it active. And I don't know if that's the case, but, you know, maybe they're just want to keep stomping until the flames go out. Sadly, they're going to burn their feet before that happens. But
I think that's true. You know, it's funny because they've done this shooting themselves or burning themselves in the foot so many times. You know, they're not learning any lessons here. I mean, you know, they did it with SARS, and they've done it with bird flu, and they did it with swine flu, and perhaps even with Ebola. I mean, that was like a big thing. We're going to have this new vaccine that's going to be on the market. And now with this, and every time it becomes this big media uproar, like I said, many millions or at least thousands of more people wake up and go, should I be asking questions here? And it's interesting because it's interesting that they are calling, the media and the public health department is calling to revoke my visa to travel to Australia for these events, because I don't, and I honestly have no idea how that's going to shake out. My trip is planned to leave on February the 25th. That's why I said we've got a long ways to go here, but I find there's a bit of hypocrisy here. When there are, 1.2 million people and almost all the world leaders marching in the streets today in Europe about stopping terrorism and freedom of speech for some cartoonists, and at the same time Australia is calling to shut down freedom of speech for people who want to say that there's a page two rest of the story about vaccines and you need to be fully informed before you make your choice.
But just a little bit of hypocrisy there, huh? Well, Sherry, I have a couple
just
questions.
A little bit.
Yeah, got a couple questions that have come to mind here. First of all, is your trip, as far as you're concerned, at least at the moment, and assuming they don't disallow you entry into the country altogether, is your trip going to go forward whether or not there are venues still planning to have you speak, or even if there is only one or two of them?
Oh, yes. I mean, because this was planned as a holiday to begin with, right? And so
right.
I was planning to go and spend some time there. I'd set up the plane arrangements and was expecting this to be in combination with the speaking events. But if they continue to have my visa but say, but you're not allowed to speak publicly at any public event that has more than 3 people or something like that. I mean, I suppose there's a possibility. I don't know anything about granting or revoking visas, and I'm sure it's country-specific in terms of what their rules are. But I'm assuming that one of the options could be they allow the visa that I'm not allowed to speak at any venues about vaccines, including media interviews or something. I suppose that's an option. You know, the option is that the government decides to just let this blow through and let me come and do what I was going to do and let the thing shake out where it's going to be. And then the third option, of course, is to say, you know, I'm sorry, but we've revoked your visa and you can't come.
Well, what do you think about the possibility of even with respect to whatever the end numbers are in terms of number of venues, what do you think about the possibility of later doing some sort of webinar or internet kind of talk that all those people could still tune into without you even necessarily leaving the country? You know, in other words, they can go through all they want to keep you out, and if that's what they ultimately end up doing, so be it. But can they keep you from still sharing your information with anybody who wants to listen to it?
Well, that was one of the questions that I had that, you know, to this point I haven't had answered. I mean, is what does that really mean? I mean, if they revoke the visa, does that also mean that it can't be Skyped in? It can't be recorded and sent in and played somewhere else? I had several people say, why don't you video record it and put it on the internet? And then everybody who was going to see it, probably more people would have seen it. But I know that right now that the organizers on the other end, I mean, I know Stephanie and her entire team of people are looking for other locations and other venues. And so I don't want to get too far down the road with some sort of an internet type of presentation when there's still a possibility that things could go forward as planned.
Well, we will all be listening with bated breath to hear how this plays out. And you're not scheduled to actually be there until March, right? Sometime in March?
I'm scheduled, as it is right now, to leave here February the 25th.
Okay, so right at the end of next month.
At the end of next month. That's why I was saying that it's still a long ways away to see what plays out. And what's been interesting, Alan, is that not only has there been this large group of the Australian skeptics and the public health people and the pro-vaccine people and who else knows who's behind all of that have been pushing to revoke my visa, there is now a growing groundswell of people that have said, this is ridiculous. And there's a push, being a groundswell of a pushback coming of people saying, we can't have this, you know. I've had emails or Facebook messages from people saying, I wasn't even planning to attend your event because I live so far away from where these are, but it's just wrong that they're stifling this freedom of speech here in our country. So there's an organizational effort that's happening, and that's why I say it's going to be interesting to continue to watch to see what happens here over the next 6 weeks. That's a long time.
So basically, let me see if I can crystallize this down to the short takeaway, Sherry. So basically, anybody who really wants to make a difference in the world should go on vacation.
Plan a vacation, and then, oh, by the way, do a little business on the vacation and do some other things, meet some friends. And yes, that's an idea. That's good.
I'm just so amused that all this has come out of something that originally started as a vacation and you know, just taking a holiday. And I'm sure not to attribute any naivete whatsoever on your part, but I suspect you were not planning on any of this and it just sort of mushroomed out of nowhere to one degree or another. Well, we'll definitely want to keep tabs with you on this over the next few weeks as this goes forward and see how it plays out.
One last thing I'll say about that is that, you know, you just, when you said, was I not expecting of this, and you alluded to it earlier, absolutely not. And I've been asked that by every media professional in Australia, in the U.S. I've spoken to now people in Europe, and they've all said, were you expecting this, or were you rather surprised by the viciousness of and what this has struck out to be so strongly against you personally? And I would have to say yes, absolutely it surprises me. I knew that this was a hot topic and probably hotter in Australia than anywhere else. I mean, we've never had this kind of a blowback here in the States, thankfully. But
right.
I never thought it was going to, and Stephanie had said to me, you know, it may get a little rocky when it gets close to the time that you're going to be here. We had no idea. We could not have possibly anticipated this much uproar, which I think is the perfect word for it.
Well, I hope you're planning and investigating. Well, I know you are because we've discussed briefly before, but good security, because to the extent that the people who are behind the pro-vaccine, whatever you want to call it here, this whole vicious attacks and so forth, there is some portion of the population, of course, general population, who buys into that, gets behind it, supports it, and so forth. And so I would be concerned, and I imagine you yourself and others, about your safety if you do go ahead and go over there. But so we all certainly, you know, wish for you that you take whatever reasonable steps are necessary. And maybe I'm overreacting, but we love you. We want to keep you around for a while. So
no,
we hope it
thanks.
and we need you. This is a classic example of why we need you, because you are, you know, it's like the bigger the backlash, the more, and, you know, I'm sure that's been difficult for you, the attacks on a personal level, yet at the same time, it's a real indication of what a powerful voice you are for the vaccine community, the alternative vaccine community. And, you know, they wouldn't be attacking you if they didn't feel like you had something that could undermine their profit motives and whatever other agendas are going on here. So there's a very strong positive side to all this. And, of course, you've already alluded to that, saying that any publicity is publicity. So, again, it's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. I'll be eager, as I'm sure the listeners are, to hear the updates over the next few weeks here. So,
yes, that'll be good.
May I ask, just in brief or in general, what is sort of a quick synopsis? Were you going to be talking about just sort of vaccines collectively in general, or was there a narrower focus? Was it more of a kind of generalized thing? Or?
Well, you could see it on the flyers that got sent out, and this is what alerted the pro-vaccine community down there that Stephanie started advertising after the first of the year to try to sell tickets. And to sell, and the ticket sales, the money that was raised from the ticket sales was simply going to pay for the venues. And so this was not money raised to pay me. It was money for the venues. And so she was needed to start raising money for the hotels and the, you know, the projectors and the food. And if, for anybody who's ever done any seminars, you know how expensive it is. And for those who have never been on the backside of seminar planning, you have no idea how outrageously expensive it is. And so she started to promote it, and I was going to be talking about the history of mandatory vaccination, where that came from, and the conversation generally starts with what about smallpox, what about polio, and talking a little bit about that, and some discussions about vaccines and pregnancy, and a little bit of a discussion about vitamin K shots. And so that was pretty much the things, and I was going to do the same thing in each one of the locations, so I didn't have to prepare, you know, 12 different presentations, and people would all hear the same thing. And so a lot of it is things that I've spoken about before, just maybe attuned a little bit differently to Australians, but nothing surprising, nothing like suddenly out of the box, like an oh my goodness, aha, just a way to. And I really felt, Alan, it's like we already said, that most of the people prior to this big uproar would have been people who maybe already knew of me, had known me through the Internet or through radio or through Facebook or something like that, and had an opportunity to get together and meet me in person and pretty much speak into the choir, as you would say. But I think it's going to be a whole different audience now if this whole thing comes together.
Yeah, might be a heckler or two, given the furor over all this. Well, again, we'll look forward to updates, and I hope that I know you've had a crazy media schedule then recently, doing all kinds of interviews with people in Australia, I guess, and primarily in particular, but you also mentioned Europe. And you said right before the show started today, I think this was your fourth time on radio just today. So, Sherry,
right.
I wish for you a little rest in the days to come.
Thank
here.
You.
A
Thank
little bit
you.
Of a reprieve, and hopefully it'll calm down at least a little bit. But this is terrific, and gee, glad I get to be your co-host.
Oh, gosh, stop already.
All right, well, let's move on just to some other things that are going on, because there's always, you know, Mayer and I found this out right away when we started the show almost 2.5 years ago now, that there's always more to talk about than there is time. And I don't know if you had any other topics in particular that you wanted to bring up. But let me just mention briefly, I've seen a couple of articles very recently that were talking about people who died from the flu, and one was a 26-year-old hospital worker, and I don't remember the other one, but in both instances, they had also gotten the flu vaccine. And I can just hear the mainstream view. Well, it's better if it protects against a few strains than no strains, and so you should get the shot anyway. And I feel sure that nobody is looking at those, what are being called flu deaths, and saying, well, gee, I wonder if the flu vaccine they got could have had anything to do with that, because as Dr. King has been fond of pointing out, and I'm, for one, I'm grateful that he has, he talked about one study in particular that was looking at 9 to 15-year-olds, so it was kids, but there was something like 3 to 4 times the rate of flu-like illness in the ones that got an influenza vaccine as compared to the ones that didn't. And there's also information that I've seen from the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, where they were saying the data they had showed that if you got a flu vaccine 2 years in a row, it might actually lower protection. So it's not only a question of is the flu vaccine, you know, very effective or not, but is it even potentially counterproductive, at least with respect to flu-like illnesses in the collective sense? And I wondered if you had any thoughts or insights about any of that. I know in the past you've done a lot of research on the flu vaccine, but I don't know if that's something you've looked at, you know, real recently or not. Any thoughts there? And we've got another minute or two here before we need to run to break.
Oh, gosh, Alan, we could talk about this the whole rest of the time. I mean, there was a study that came out within the last couple of months that said that if the flu shots, if they work at all, seem to work the best if you have not had one in the last 5 years. So every 5 years instead of annually. I did a retrospective analysis of the CDC data a couple of years ago when I put out my influenza DVD, and it said that out of when they would swab the nasal mucosa and swab the throat and send it down and actually test it, when people would come in with influenza-like illness, cough, fever, chills, body aches, you know, mucus and all that stuff, they would swab it and actually test it. And something, it was like less than 15% of the time was the test actually positive for influenza viruses. So that means that if you got the flu shot and if it worked, it was going to work about 15% of the time. And you could still get the flu 85% of the time by some other pathogen that wasn't covered by the flu shot at all. And then the follow-up to that could be, well, if you did get the flu shot, would that mean it may have lowered your immunity or lowered your resistance and made you more susceptible to these other types of pathogens? And, oh, by the way, there is a couple of studies that show that. And so that's the one issue about the flus. And then the other thing I'll say before we go to break is that, you know, the media does the absolute smear campaign job on anyone that has a, quote, vaccine-preventable disease and has an adverse outcome or has a death. Oh, my gosh. Two people died from the flu, and if they would have gotten the flu shot, they would have been saved. But there is never a peep of all the people who die the vaccine, that they get a shot and they have a horrible adverse event and die.
And let me talk about that just briefly. On average, over the last 25 years now, that give or take, that the vaccine injury compensation program has been in place and paying out for vaccine injuries and deaths, on average, the payout each year has been over $110 million. And in recent years, the last very few years, as more and more flu vaccines have been administered, now the payouts for flu vaccine injury and death are larger than all the other vaccines put together. And I don't have a precise figure, but it's probably something on the order of, give or take, in terms of order of magnitude, in the vicinity of 2/3 or 3/4 of the payouts now are going to influenza vaccine injuries and deaths. Now, that's probably not because the flu vaccine is far more horrible than the other vaccines, but rather because there's so many more flu vaccines administered than the other kinds of vaccines. You know, they're administered annually for people who are get them every year, and increasingly now being pushed and, of course, as you know, outright required for healthcare workers around the country. But we need to understand that the push on healthcare workers, at least at one level, comes from the Federal Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020 initiative, where their goal is to vaccinate 90% of healthcare workers with the flu vaccine annually by 2020. There is a separate goal to vaccinate 80% of the rest of us by 2020 as well. So I'm expecting that we're going to see a jump from the healthcare community. They're not going to leave that community alone. There's still going to be the push there, and there'll still be more hospitals coming on board every year mandating flu vaccines. But we're going to see a jump probably this coming fall, I would guess, and increasingly up to 2020 and perhaps beyond. But in other industries, other companies, industries and so forth. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Now, this is unless, of course, there is some sort of successful effort to nip that in the bud, and we can talk about that some more on the other side of break if you'd like. But let's go ahead and take a break here. We've got to pull in some information here for Natural News, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes, folks. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Alan Phillips will be right back with you, so don't go away.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
And I just realized I had my mic turned off, so I bet nobody heard me in the last couple of minutes there. our last several seconds. Let's try it again with the mic turned on. Sorry for that pause of silence there, folks. We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips, and just wanted to let everybody know that archives of the Know Your Rights Hour are available at blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour without the word the at the beginning. So that's blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. And the archives are also available at naturalnewsradio.com. So you can find it at both locations. And let's see, Sherry, where were we? I was talking something about the payouts from the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, federal program, and how they are now more injury and death payouts for influenza vaccines than all the other vaccines put together, probably because of how many more flu vaccines are administered than all the other vaccines. So this is not a theoretical or hypothetical concern when we talk about vaccine injury and death. And then, as you well know, Sherry, and probably far better than me, so much research that brings into question the effectiveness of the vaccines in the first place. And as you said, even if they are effective, what's the point when, according to the Cochrane Collaboration, there's over 200 viruses that can cause flu-like symptoms? So is it a good idea to protect yourself from three or four of them? Yes, if the vaccine works and you're not going to have a risk of injury and death, yeah, it would be a good idea, I think. But unfortunately, it's not that straightforward, is it?
No, it's not at all. And I've always said this, Alan, and I really believe it, that health cannot come through a needle, you know, in terms of what's being injected into you. Oh, I suppose I've had some people argue with me and say, well, but penicillin can help people. Yes, it can. And insulin certainly saves lives, and that comes through a needle. Yes, it does. But when I talk about when they promote vaccines, they really promote it from the perspective of vaccines keep you healthy. And I would beg to differ about that. I don't think that they do. And, in fact, there's more articles coming out all the time about the fact that vaccinated children are the ones who are actually shedding these viruses rather than not really the unvaccinated ones. And so we've got to start looking at what type of research is out there to support the fact that vaccines are causing more harm. And, in fact, you know, every Tuesday, Alan, we post on our Facebook page, which is Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines, or you can go to facebook.com/vaccineinfo and get to my page. And there's 112,000 fans out there now and growing exponentially every day. And every Tuesday we post what we call the Scream of the Week, which is what is the one of the more egregious types of articles published with the conclusions of the abstract saying, how can this possibly be? How can they let this continue? And then every Friday we publish somewhere between 6 and 10 new articles that are being gleaned that week from the conventional medical literature showing problems associated with vaccines. And all of those articles over the last 2.5 years have been cataloged and put into the Vaccine Research Library, which is vaccinereserchlibrary.com. And, yes, it's a subscription site, and it's a subscription site for a reason. It's because I have two employees that work doing this for me on a weekly basis, nearly full-time, and so the site generates enough money off of the revenues of the subscription to pay the employees and to do the hosting fees and the different things that we do with the website. So if you want succinct information, you can get 1 month for free and have access to information about MMR, pertussis, and aluminum. And then my researcher, Cindy, every Friday posts somewhere between 6 and 10 new articles about problems associated with vaccines in a section for the members that says new this week. And then the subsequent Friday, she'll take each one of those articles and file them in their appropriate filings and put up 6 to 10 more. So I think it's important, and Alan, you and I have spoken about this a little bit before, to let people know that there is a voluminous amount of information that says that vaccines can and do cause harm. And it's not that people have said to me, why don't you publish your information? I always say it's because it's already been published. What I'm doing is exposing people and letting people know that it's there. I mean, I don't have to do any of that work. I don't like to do clinical research. And so I think that to know that it's coming out more and more all the time is pretty amazing.
Well, Sherry, it's really interesting because I have long ago got away from trying to spend my time and energy arguing with people about vaccines on the internet because I found that it was just tremendous energy and time sucker, basically. And there are some people who will still do that and do it effectively. And so it was just a personal decision. But every once in a while, I do sort of get sucked in. I allow myself, and I'll post studies. And I posted a list of studies recently, and the response, it was on a Facebook page, and the response was something about cherry-picking studies. And my response to the accusation of cherry-picking now is vaccineresearchlibrary.com, 6,500 peer-reviewed published studies and growing.
you can't really call it cherry-picking. Right. Well, I'll tell you, there's this article that's going to go up in the next couple days, and it's an abstract. Now, these are we publish in the library what we can, meaning it's the things that are free in the public domain, and the advantage to you is that we do all the research for you, and it's all collected and filed into appropriate folders about measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, hepatitis B. There's a section on conflicts of interest and money problems associated with manufacturing. And so we've got it divided up for you, and you have to read it. And so we've got links to abstracts and links to PDF files that you could certainly go and spend 20 to 40 hours a week like my researcher does and find that for yourself. But we've done it for you. And there's a new article this week, and the title of the article is Vaccination of Patients with Autoimmune Inflammatory Diseases. And part of the abstract says that if patients that have autoimmune inflammatory rheumatoid disease, the immune response might be impaired due to the immunosuppressive drugs that they're taking. Therefore, getting a vaccination could trigger a response and potentially increase the underlying disease. And so that is one of, like you said, 6,500 examples that says that somebody who's already sick and gets a vaccine could make them worse. It could trigger a further underlying disease. And as we know, Alan, when they do the first part of investigating clinical trials on vaccines, all of the studies are done on completely healthy people and healthy babies and healthy children, that they have no underlying disease, they're on no medications, they have no other problems, and they're put into the clinical trial. And so when the vaccine industry declares these vaccines to be safe and effective for that particular population of children or adults, then as soon as they make it available and it goes on the vaccination schedule, it is heavily promoted to be given to children with underlying illnesses like cystic fibrosis and rheumatoid diseases and heart disease and all that, for which the vaccine has never been tested.
Don't they sometimes also say, Sherry, that these people who have various chronic conditions need vaccines all the more because they're more susceptible to the wild diseases? Have you ever heard that kind of promotion for vaccines? I've heard that kind of thing before. Because every time I hear somebody, you know, saying, oh, well, this person needs the vaccine even more because they're even more susceptible than a normal healthy person. And every time I hear that, what goes through my mind is, yeah, and they're probably more susceptible to adverse events from the vaccine for the same reason, you know. And any thoughts about that?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're taking somebody who's already sick, already compromised, already on drugs, many of them on immunosuppressive drugs, such as steroids or Remicade or something like that that's very suppressive. And now you're going to inject something into their system that can complicate the problems even more. And so way back when I was an ER doc, Alan, and I was still working full-time in the emergency room and in the director of an emergency department, I remember when children would come in and they would be sick, and that was years before I knew and even had begun looking at any of this information. the children would come in and they'd have a fever and an ear infection or some other thing that was going on with them. And the nurses would come to me and say, well, they're behind on their shots. Do you think we ought to give them the vaccines while they're here? And I would say, oh, absolutely not. We don't want to inject them with any other stuff that might complicate the problem. And, you know, their immune system is working hard enough right now. They don't need, their immune system doesn't need to be working with that stuff. Well, if that's true, not only with somebody who is acutely ill with a fever or cough or whatever, then it's certainly true with someone who is chronically suppressed by drugs that they are taking for a chronic condition. So I'm in total agreement with what you just said.
It just seems so crazy, but all of it does. But, you know, we can't go over this material too many times or too thoroughly or too broadly because while and I'd be curious again too, Sherry, to see your thoughts on this. I'm certainly of the impression that there is has been and continues to be growing awareness and concern about vaccines. It seems to be moving more quickly the level of awareness than some places we'd like to see the effects of that. For example, I still feel like it's only a very tiny percentage of healthcare workers who are able or willing to take a stand and request or insist on an exemption, for example, in the workplace. I have many healthcare workers who come to me where the first thing they say, of course, is, how do I avoid the flu shot? And sometimes the second or third thing they say is, and by the way, there's five other people in my department who don't want the shot either, but they're afraid to even ask for an exemption. So, and we've seen polls, I don't know, even 3 or 4 years ago, there were some polls that were showing that more than 50% of parents polled had some question or concern about vaccines, but we're seeing the overall national exemption rate, well, it has gone up in some states and down in others. I think overall it's held steady the last couple of years, according to information I've seen from the CDC anyway, for whatever that's worth. And so the level of awareness, I believe, is increasing, but it's not necessarily translating to people, significant numbers of people trying to opt out. But what's your impression, just, I don't know, in your medical practice or in your other work in this arena about whether or not awareness is growing, aside from the fact that now it's going to mushroom from what's going on with the Australia event?
Well, I've been asked that question several times, and, you know, I've been doing this a long time, Alan. I mean, my first segue into investigating problems associated with vaccines was when I went to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000. I mean, we're in 2015, so I'm quickly approaching having been doing this for 15 years now, and I can say that 15 years ago, there was really a handful of people that were saying, hey, we should take a look at this. Just a handful. I bet there weren't, I would go out on a limb and estimate, I'll bet there weren't 100 people in the whole world who were actually saying, this is a problem we should be looking at. And if there were more than that, it was very quietly one-on-one, you know, maybe inside of their own families or something. But on a broad public basis, there were a handful of us. And now I say there's thousands. I mean, I went out the other day just because of all the things that are going on Facebook, and I went out to Facebook and just put in a search word for vaccine to see how many websites, you know, how many Facebook pages were out there about vaccines, and there are a couple hundred, maybe even more, and many of that are out there talking about problems associated with vaccines. And that on those Facebook pages, there are hundreds, even thousands, even tens of thousands of followers. And, of course, there's some overlap, but I can't believe that there's some overlap, but I can't imagine that it's a large amount of overlap because, you know, we all find people that we like to follow and we like their stuff, and there's only so many hours in the day that you can spend on Facebook. And so The idea that there's a larger grassroots movement now, there's more younger people who are questioning, there's people who are waking up, and the other thing that I've seen that is quite different is that in the beginning, the pediatricians and the doctors were so militant that they would never work with parents who didn't want to vaccinate or maybe only wanted to selectively vaccinate. And even though we still have somewhat that militance out there, and I know it exists, I believe there's a softening around the edges that I think that pediatricians are becoming more tolerant. Perhaps they're starting to do at least at some level some amount of investigation. I mean, it's, at this point in time, the information is so pervasive and so available. To not do it, I think, should be criminal.
Well, and that's, you know, the goal is to get the truth out so that we have a system that really treats it the way it ought to be treated. And that's probably, you know, a part of the resistance of those who have been controlling things, because if the truth is fully out there under the spotlight, there are going to be some very tough questions for some of the people who have been pushing this agenda, and especially perhaps those profiting from it. Because they know what's going on. And once that becomes, once not only what's going on becomes more clear, but the fact that they continued year after year after year to push the agenda despite knowing what's going on, there's going to be some very tough questions to answer. So it's no wonder that people, some of the people in the pro-vaccine arena at least, are having difficulty with or let's put it like this, it's no wonder that at least some of them are pushing as aggressively as they are to maintain the status quo. Well, I think it's inevitable. The status quo is already changing. Of course, I tend to hear from people who are having problems, and so I know at least from that experience that there are plenty of pediatricians around the country who are very aggressive in their support of the vaccine agenda, to the point to where originally what I was hearing was people saying that they were being having to sign this so-called vaccine refusal form, or they the parents would have to sign it, or the pediatricians wouldn't treat the kids. And now I've seen it shift to the level where now they're just flat out refusing to treat any unvaccinated children at all, regardless of the reason that they're not vaccinated. That raises some serious legal questions. But on a practical level, not very many parents are going to be willing to sue a pediatrician to force them to treat their child. And the same sort of thing comes up with private schools, which in most states do have to accept exemptions, but a lot of them just dig in their heels and say, no, we're not going to do it. You know, they take what attorneys sometimes call the so sue me position. And how many parents, again, are going to sue a private school to force them to accept their child? So these are some issues that even when there are legal rights, it's not necessarily there's not necessarily a practical way to enforce the rights. But sooner or later, we're going to have some people step forward and get into these cases, which we need to do in terms of the way the legal system works. We need some legal precedent on some of these points. And the only way you can get legal precedent is from an actual lawsuit. Now, not every lawsuit ends up generating legal precedent, but if we have some people filing some of these cases, and if they are managed well and win, then there's at least the potential that will generate some legal precedent, and then that can then help open doors for people in other situations to be more cooperative when there's some sort of clear legal authority that says, hey, this is where the line is, and you can't refuse kids just because you don't want to have an unvaccinated child in your practice or in your school. Yeah, go ahead, Sharon.
Alan, what would you say would be some of the legal ramifications? Now, I would think it would be hard to sue a school system because they're part of the state. And it's sort of like suing the government in so many ways, because that's where some of those things would come in, particularly for public school systems. But, you know, and we've got these vaccine things that hang over people's head in terms of protection from, you can't sue the pharmaceutical industry and you can't sue the doctors. But what about the hospitals? I mean, what about the hospitals that force these things? Is it just all about private contracts and hospitals, because they're private institutions, they're allowed to set their rules?
Well, first of all, your instincts about suing the government are well-founded. Government entities will have one degree or another of immunity from suit, from being sued, but the details, it just depends. But there certainly are times when you can sue the government, so it's not a flat-out, complete and total immunity. And it's just going to depend on the particular state laws and particular situation and so forth. But mostly where it comes up in the school arena, and I know you said hospitals, but I just wanted to respond real briefly. Mostly where this is an issue in the school arena is not with the public schools, but with the private schools, where the private schools are saying, well, we're a private school, we can do whatever we want. And that just turns out not to be the case most of the time when you're talking about whether or not they have to allow or accept vaccine exemptions. But there's a whole other topic about what seems to be a trend now nationally with Catholic schools. We'll have to come back and elaborate on that at another time. With the hospitals, most states don't have a state exemption law that applies to employees or that applies to healthcare workers. So in this arena, unless you live in Maine, which has state medical, religious, and philosophical exemptions for healthcare workers, the only options you have are medical and religious. And hospitals are moving to a medical exemption policy mirroring what the CDC recommends, which basically boils down to you have to have a history of anaphylactic shock or Guillain-Barré syndrome within 6 weeks of a vaccine, or you don't qualify. Now, I have only recently been made aware that there are some Americans with Disabilities Act provisions that might help at least some people with medical exemptions. With the religious exemptions, though, you're dealing with federal civil rights law, and this applies to public or private employers that have 15 or more employees. And by way of very quick introduction, I, at this point, have probably worked with something on the order of 350 or more healthcare workers around the country in the last 3 or 4 years. So I've seen a pretty good sampling of what's going on around the country in this arena. And an overwhelming majority, I haven't kept exact numbers, but I would say 97-98%, if not more, are implementing unlawful religious exemption policies, if they even offer one at all. And most of them do. It's just an unlawful policy. Well, there are ways to deal with that. This is something that falls, because it's federal civil rights law, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal agency that enforces these anti-discrimination laws, if you end up at odds with your employer over this, you can go, in fact, you have to go to the EEOC before you could sue, even if you wanted to sue, and it doesn't cost anything to go to the EEOC. So there's an extra step there that can be really helpful to people in this arena. But there are a couple of difficulties there. One is that most of the employers have an unlawful, as in overly restrictive, policy in the first place, and a lot of employees are not even stopping to ask, is my employer's policy a legal or lawful policy or not? And then this is one of those arenas where you have to state your religious beliefs, and there are pitfalls with that as well. It's really broad who can potentially qualify. It doesn't matter whether you belong to any church at all or what church you belong to if you do. But when it comes to what specific beliefs qualify, most people run into trouble when they do that on their own. So people really would be best advised to seek an attorney experienced in this area. Sherry, we're down to the last few seconds. Any last 10 or 15 second comments here before I take us out?
No, other than just stay, you know, come back every week, stay updated on what we're doing. I think that what Alan just was explaining was just really valuable information, to start getting people together. It's really good. And we're going to be doing this every Monday night now. So come join us. Feel free to call in. We didn't take any calls tonight, but we will in the future. So we look forward to having you back and joining us every Monday night at this time.
Sherry, it's been wonderful. I'm really looking forward to going forward from here. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. We broadcast at naturalnewsradio.com every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring.
land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one